and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang on our Thursday live day. This day is supposed to be a day for the discussion on the nectar story of the divine life of Bhagwan Sri Rama, as penned by our dear Lord Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. But last week, Thursday, happened to be the Krishna Janmashtami day, the day of the birth of Lord Krishna, and Prem and myself began a topic on whether Lord Krishna is a warmonger or an epitome of peace. And we could not complete that topic, and therefore we are postponing the Ramkatha Satsang, Ramkatha fortnight, by one more week, and we shall be doing it next week. This week we will continue on where we had left off last week. But before that, let me offer my most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami and thank him for this wonderful opportunity that we all have to think about him, speak about him, listen about him. And with that, I welcome Brother Prem to join us in the satsang and take this topic forward with where we had left off last week, that is Krishna having arrived to Hastinapura on the peace mission and staying at Vidura's house.
Yeah, I think before we get to that, of course, sai ram to all our listeners and pranams to Swami's feet. There was an interesting question that came, and I think we should start with that because it's a very thought-provoking question, very important one. And I think we might have spoken about it before and we intended to speak about it even this week. But thanks to the question, I think it came from Austria. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce that person's name because I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong. But it's a listener from Austria, and I'll just read out a few parts of the question that this person has sent it to us. It's in reference to that point where Krishna sends his army, the Narayani Sena, to fight on behalf of the Kauravas, because Arjuna makes the choice between Krishna. First of all, Krishna offers the choice between himself and his army, and his army is comprises of people who are devoted to Krishna, who have given
basically
themselves
the Yadava army, that
right,
is
right, they've given themselves up to Krishna. In fact, if you read the Bhagavatam, the way Krishna builds that army is a beautiful story of its own, because they're all small units, tribal clans, literally. They're not like kingdoms like the Kaurava and Vidarbha and those kingdoms.
In fact, just adding over here, if we see the way Krishna has built up the Yadava kingdom, it's amazing. It is turned from a small kingdom into an empire.
Right.
And the Narayani Sena is the most fierce fighting force. In fact, from where I was reading, it quotes that almost 1,800 of Krishna's relatives, like direct relatives, uncles, cousins, brothers, they were part of this Narayani Sena. Oh. So it's not even like Krishna is giving away a third party of people who are dedicated to him. The Narayani Sena consists even of his own family members, 1,800 of them, going by the source that I read from.
Right, and that's how he builds the army, because many of them are small chieftains, they're rulers of their own clan. So he brings them all together and brings this huge force of Yadavas together, and that is why the Narayani Sena had such a reputation. And you can understand how delighted Duryodhana was when he was, when he was left with Narayani Sena to choose. So the question is about that, and this listener asks that, if I understand it right, Krishna had an army and he commanded his army to fight for the Kauravas, the personification of adharma. Where is the care for his army and for their dharma? Did not many of them join his army and they have been convinced that Krishna is on the side of dharma and that they only have to fight to protect dharma? They trusted him, their leader misused their trust and commanded them to fight for the adharmic side. All or most of them did not know that Krishna was an avatar. They just had to obey this adharmic command. If I had been one of them, that would have been totally against my conscience. Or should soldiers not ask their conscience and follow blindly all commands? We here in Austria and Germany are very sensitive in regard to following adharmic commands blindly. I hope I could point out in short what troubles me.
Yes.
So I think that's a very, very good question. And before we go about it, there's one point which we often make during the Ramakatha sessions. You know, any of these dilemmas, or when you pick out incidents from the avatar's life and try to explain or ask questions, we most definitely should ask. In fact, in one of the discourses, Swami says that is precisely why the avatars leaves loopholes. You know, why do avatars do things which are controversial? At least in the process of questioning those actions, you will ruminate over those actions and be in a position to draw the essence out of those actions.
At this point, Prem, one more interesting quote.
Right?
I just loved it. I read it just today. A wise man is saying, you know, when somebody had asked some doubts regarding the Bhagavad Gita, he says, while answering it, I am not going into the answer.
Okay.
The quote that he says is, the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita is, when you think you have got clarity, reading it will confuse you. But when you are confused, reading it will give you clarity. It's so amazing, you know, that statement, because it stops you from being complacent. At the same time, it gives you solutions. He said that the Bhagavad Gita confuses you when you think you have clarity, and gives you clarity when you're thinking you're confused.
And precisely, you can say that about the avatar's life itself. The avatar's life itself is a long drawn message, as we've seen in Swami's life, in the life of Rama, Krishna, or any, in fact, divine personage, like a prophet, like Jesus, or anybody like that.
Yeah. When you think that you don't know anything of the avatar reveals himself to you.
Right.
When you think you know the avatar, you suddenly realize that you know nothing.
Right. And there is one point which we made during the Ramayana satsangs. Though consciously many of these people did not recognize Krishna as an avatar, right, or in the case of Rama, Rama as an avatar, Swami would say this: when an avatar comes down, you know, in any role, you might, in Krishna's case, he came down as a cowherd boy. In Swami's case, Swami comes down as a regular boy who goes to school, right? Swami said that there will be many souls who are waiting to take birth when an avatar comes down, and they will choose positions which apparently from the spiritual standpoint are very, very trivial. And they will only take positions which will give them some kind of proximity to the Lord. So when you look at it from a worldly point of view, it might look like a king and a minister. It might look like a commander and the army men. It might look like two classmates together. But subconsciously, that soul has made the choice to be born in that position, because at least in some form, there will be some kind of a relationship with the avatar. So I think that
maybe,
is something...
Maybe not just subconsciously, superconsciously it has made the choice.
Absolutely. I mean, you might not know it in your in the mind which has the memory, which is conscious to the events which are happening around. But I feel this is some point which you have to keep in mind. And that is why when you talk about the question says... that if, didn't they ask their conscience that this is adharmic? No, when you ask your conscience, the conscience will also have this factor in that answer. Because the conscience will know that, you know, you have come to this place to be obedient to Krishna. You have no loyalty to dharma or adharma. Your loyalty to Krishna is much higher and superior than all of this. And in fact, that is one more thing we see in the war too, when Krishna asks Arjuna to shoot an arrow at unarmed Karna. When he asks Yudhishthira to tell the lie that Ashwatthama is dead, all of these are technically speaking adharmic or untruthful acts. But Krishna was all the time telling that when the choice comes between your idea of good and bad and obeying me, whom you have consciously or subconsciously or superconsciously accepted as divine, following me becomes your dharma.
Prem, I will have to interrupt here, because 2-3 beautiful threads have come up in my heart, and I would like to share them. The first thread is what you said, that you know, when you have faith in Bhagwan Krishna being the Lord, then your concept of dharma is just subservient to what the Lord says. In fact, the example that you quoted of how Yudhishthira refuses actually to tell the lie that Ashwatthama is dead, so that Drona gives up his arms, and he is... that is the way Drona's fall is brought about. And we also read in the Mahabharata how, for this particular episode, Yudhishthira had to face momentary hell. And you know, in his discourse, Bhagwan has so beautifully clarified that Yudhishthira had to face hell because of this episode, but not because he told a lie that Ashwatthama is dead. But because when Krishna commanded him to tell that, he hesitated and questioned the Lord for a moment. That was the sin. Not the sin that he told Ashwatthama is dead. Because for the Lord who is beyond three times, beyond the past, present and future, and who is beyond everything, what is a lie, what is a truth? Swami himself says there are three levels. Nijam, which is a fact. It's like saying Brazil is the, or Germany is the world champion. That's a fact. Because in football, I mean, in soccer. Because tomorrow, next 4 years later, it may change. It's not permanent. Then there is Nijam.
Hopefully. As sports enthusiasts, yes, that's what we expect.
Yeah. So that is Nijam. Then there is Satyam. And finally, Satyam is some truth that holds good for the past, present and future. And then there is Rutam, which is beyond time. Because God is beyond time. And at, from the level of Rutam, you can't tie him down to Nijam and Satyam. You know, that is one thing I wanted to state. The second thing is, so therefore it comes to you believing. If you believe your leader is divine, you know, you believe that your leader is divine, then, yeah, what if Swami told you to do something that you feel is contrary to your dharma? You will just give it up. That is only if you have conviction that Swami is God. Otherwise, yes, you stick to your dharma. And we see that happening here, Prem. Because though the Narayani Sena went to the Kaurava side, one powerful fraction of the Narayani Sena, which was headed by a very, very powerful warrior, decided not to fight for the Kauravas. And that's because the person who was heading it felt Krishna as his friend, not as a god.
Oh, okay.
That is Satyaki. Satyaki decides to join the Pandavas, fights for the Pandavas.
Mm-hmm.
And Satyaki's entire army, that army, which is also part of the Narayani Sena, is the only part that fights for the Pandavas in the battle. Because, as the listener has written, he exercised what he felt is true. Means now he is thinking of Krishna as a human, as a leader. And therefore, when it goes against my conscience, I will not obey. So that is the difference that comes in here. And so Satyaki was also redeemed. In fact, I think we discussed this one episode, one experience of how in a tri-session, this was narrated to us by Professor G. Venkatraman, in a tri-session, how a person from the army said, asked Swami, Swami, what should I do if my boss, commander, tells me something that is, in my opinion, immoral? I mean, my conscience tells me not to do it. Then Swami told him that you should try to explain and ensure that he changes. He says, Swami, what if they don't change? Swami says, then don't do it. And he says, Swami, then I'll get court-martialed. Because in army, the greatest sin is disobedience. The way they train you is if they tell you to march over a cliff and fall down, you march over the cliff and fall down. That is the kind of training you receive in the army. Because that is the kind of training you need while fighting a war. So, this kind of disobedience is grave sin. So, he told Swami, then they will court-martial me. Swami said, so be it. Swami, I'll be on the streets. Nothing to fend for myself and my wife, my children. What will happen to them? Swami said, so be it. And even as this person was wondering as to how can God seem so cruel, Swami told him, it appears as though your faith in dharma is very, very low. You don't have the conviction that if you protect dharma, dharma will protect you. So Swami said, yeah. So in answer to this listener, definitely if it goes against the conscience, yes, you don't agree to the leader. But when you're convinced that your leader is God, you set aside. Because here, Yudhishthira was convinced that Krishna is divine. So many times he has seen Krishna work out miracles. And he considers him as his Lord. That's why though Yudhishthira did not want the war in the first place, the only reason he's fighting the war is because Krishna said we should fight the war. When you have that, here it is showing lack of faith. And you are shaking on your faith. And that is why Yudhishthira had to suffer that whatever moments in hell. And the final point that I want to make is, dharmo rakshati rakshita holds good. See, though the Narayani Sena fought from the Kaurava side, the Narayani Sena on the Kaurava side was commanded by nobody, by a person no less in stature than Kritavarma. Kritavarma, the great warrior of the Yadavas. And guess what? At the end of the battle, at the end of the war, Kritavarma and Narayani Sena are alive. The Yadavas didn't die out in the war. The Dharma protected them. they had to play the part. Now when you look at it, had not the Narayani Sena joined the Kauravas, Duryodhana would not have the courage to take up the war. It is said that they had an army consisting of two Akshauhinis. Mm-hmm. And one Akshauhini goes as some 11 lakh foot soldiers, then 11,000 chariots, 11,000 elephants, some huge number
mm-hmm.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one Akshauhini. Two Akshauhinis were there. And simply by those numbers, it is seeing those numbers that Duryodhana got the courage to fight. Because of that courage to fight, the war happened, because of which the entire Adharma was destroyed. And you know, I feel there is a beautiful lesson here, because the world today is not black and white. But it shows that like the Narayani Sena, with faith in the Lord, even because you know, the Narayani Sena had, Narayani Sena is called a divine army. Why is it called a divine army? Why is other things not called a divine army? This is called a divine army because they are fighting for a commander who is divine, which means they are all convinced that Krishna is divine. So you see, the people who are not convinced that Krishna is divine, they have a choice to make with their conscience. And Satyaki and his army chose the Pandavas against Krishna's wishes. And Duryodhana could do nothing about it. Satyaki speaks away to Duryodhana and says, you know, if given a chance, I will rip your head, but I will not fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
And Duryodhana says, who wants you? Get out. He says, yeah, I am glad. Even if you call me, I will not come. That is how Satyaki is on the side of the Pandavas. But Kritavarma and the others who are convinced of Krishna's divinity, they fight. And Kritavarma, you know, it's like how we discussed Kaikeyi in Ramayana. Mm-hmm. Because Kritavarma is so obedient to Krishna that he is there even when Duryodhana plots the killing of the Upapandavas. Doesn't speak a word, because I have given my word to Krishna that Duryodhana is my commander. As long as Duryodhana lives, I serve. And once Duryodhana dies, Kritavarma returns with his entire Narayani Sena. So you see, it's not the case of Dharma forsaking somebody. Whoever protected Dharma, Dharma protected them. In other words, the other day what you said, it really struck a deep chord in me. When people ask, why are innocent harmed? You said the answer is the innocent are never harmed. That's what this story also shows.
Right. And that is from the point of view of the devotee accepting the Lord's this one. And as you said, Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, you know, give up all your idea of dharma and surrender to me. Make what I choose as your dharma. That's the, you know, maybe if you ask what's the dharma of a warrior, there is something. If you ask what's the dharma of a teacher, there is something. What's the dharma of a student, there is something. But if you ask what's the dharma of a devotee, it is complete surrender. What is the Lord's dharma becomes yours. And from Krishna's point of view, you know, it just reminds me, I mean, this question of, was he misusing the trust of the people? It just reminds me of those number of stories which you've heard from Shirdi Satcharitra and even from Swami's life, where, you know, a devotee will have some kind of an ailment. I think there's some devotee who comes to Shirdi Baba with stomach pain, and Shirdi Baba feeds him with peanuts.
Our own Sathya Sai Baba,
right.
General Mahadevan has narrated in Tarai Brindavan,
okay.
When he had a heart attack
right.
Swami gave him almonds and cashew nuts to eat, which are high in cholesterol.
Right,
you know?
Right. And Swami would do this, and this person, like Swami gave it as a treatment. I think given, if I'm not wrong, even Professor Kasturi has an experience like this.
Hmm.
When he has a swollen feet, and Swami gives him a very, very offbeat treatment, you know, gives him a suggestion.
Which will actually worsen the situation.
Which will actually worsen the situation. And in fact, he goes and suggests that to another person who is having the same ailment and ends up ruining that person's health completely.
It's not meant for him.
Right, it's not meant for him. So the message which Shirdi Baba would give and Swami would give is, it doesn't matter what the path is. You know, that's why that famous quote which I always remember in this context is, they say the spiritual path is a pathless path. Because once you're guided by your conscience, or the, you know, in the West they like to call it the super soul, the super sea, or God, or, you know, your own divinity, that path is absolutely unique to you. It's absolutely custom made for you, and that's why it's called the pathless path. There is no one particular direction in which it has to be. Just like how Swami can cure a stomach pain by giving the thing which is absolutely detrimental for that particular ailment, Swami can take you to the path, through a path which appears to be absolutely, contrary to what our idea of the path to divinity should be. And I think that is what, if you talk of it from Krishna's point of view.
If we go through the Dharma Vahini, there are two terms that stand out. One is called Atma Dharma, the other is Paradharma. And Bhagwan beautifully defines Atma Dharma as the only Dharma that has to be followed. And my understanding, I must confess that there may be some errors here, but my understanding of Atma Dharma is simply this statement that everything is divine, everything is pervaded by God, everything is the Atma. And keeping this in mind, this is the only rule that has been given to creation. But you know, it is said that the one of wisdom alone will be able to decipher this when it comes to... So if everyone is divine, how do I treat my son? You know, so how do I treat an offender? How do I treat my wife? Or anything like this. How do I treat a stranger whom I am meeting in a strange place, whom I don't trust? If for all this the only rule is everything is divine, it becomes very confusing for those who don't have wisdom. And therefore, you know, Swami says that this Atma Dharma has been decoded situationally into Paradharmas. You have Stri Dharma, you have Purusha Dharma, you have Grahastha Dharma, you have Varnashrama Dharma. You know, you have Dharma based on age, based on gender, based on situation, for everything. So many Paradharmas are there. And when this kind of conflict happens, conflict of dharma, Swami says the conflict is always between paradharma and paradharma. My duty as a husband versus my duty as an employee. My duty as a father versus my duty as a guest. I mean, and Swami says that whenever this clash happens, the resolution always happens by referring back to Atma Dharma. So for that we need either wisdom or we need to know a person who has wisdom. So, when you know it is Krishna, that is why it is said, whatever Krishna says, everything else becomes subservient to it. Because he is the one who is in absolute sync with Atma Dharma. So, in that sense also, when we see, theoretically, once you recognize Krishna as the Lord, then only that Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja works. If you think of him as a human, as a leader, as a strategist, as a great king or as a great king maker, then like Satyaki, you have to exercise your conscience and go. But what the Mahabharata beautifully shows is, whether you have considered Krishna as a statesman and used your conscience, or whether you have considered Krishna as the Lord and gone, and though it seems to be against your conscience, it can't be against your conscience, because conscience is Krishna within, while Krishna is Krishna conscience without, outside. That's all it is. So both are saved in the end. Both are saved. And I feel that is the beauty of this Mahabharata, because even if you take away the divinity of Krishna, it still holds so many lessons and still holds as an ideal for all of us.
And probably in conclusion, I'd just like to say that is why the question which was asked was very important. Because, you know, I have come across many people who, when we speak about, that's how this particular question which we are discussing for the past 2 weeks has come out, whether Krishna advocated violence or did Krishna advocate peace? The question comes because sometimes we have made our choice and we look at the scriptures, or we look at the epics to find justification for the choice that we've already made. And I think that is where the problem comes, when you will find these points highlighted. Hey, Krishna has told a lie. Hey, Krishna is told to do like this. Hey, Krishna was adharmic here, so it's okay. That's why Swami says your first approach, if you want to embark on a spiritual journey, your first approach is your ability to choose Shreyas over Prayas. Your ability to choose the right path, even if it is difficult, over the pleasant path, which appears very, very easy. And I think that's why this questioner who was asked this question, I think it's something which we all have to keep in mind. Definitely when you put in a situation out in the world, if you're working for a boss who is asking you to do the wrong things, if you're in an army, if you're in a real army, and if you're stuck, as you said of that example, and your seniors are giving you instructions or commands which are not dharmic, then definitely the response has to be to choose what is the right and, you know, follow it even at the loss, even at personal loss. So it's very, very important to first ask that question. And in fact, we are going to talk about then that one particular dialogue which happens between Krishna and Dhritarashtra, where Dhritarashtra says the same thing. He said, my children, what can I do with them? You know, I have to take care of them. And that is why Krishna, you know, decodes many of these things. When you are a king, what are you supposed to do? when you are a leader, what are you supposed to do? And the whole peace mission that we are talking about, he says, when there is scope for peace, going for peace is the most righteous thing to do.
So we are grateful to this listener who asked us this question from Austria and triggered in us introspection, made us go through Swami's discourses, think about, and we hope that this answer is satisfactory, and we are grateful to Swami for the same. Any further doubts, clarifications, definitely, as always, you can write to us at listener@radiosci.org. With that, we will continue on the story. You know, Krishna is at Vidura's place, though this is not actually directly involved with the peace mission. There are two reasons why we should narrate what happens at Vidura's place. The first reason, it shows Vidura's devotion. And the second reason, I'll tell after this. What happens here is Vidura is so lost in the love for the Lord that he wants to feed something to the Lord. And this is a sudden, unexpected visit, because as you said, Krishna is happy that I have a place in Hastinapur. Because the most... Let us say the one that is not so luxurious, the least opulent among all the mansions, is the mansion of Vidura. And Krishna says, I'll be here, because the Lord looks at the devotee and not at the opulence. And it is said that as Vidura had nothing at home, he brought bananas. And as he's feeding bananas to Lord Krishna, so lost is he in his joy that he's throwing away the pulp and giving only the peels. And Krishna doesn't point it out. Eat the peels happily, because whatever is offered with love, the Lord accepts, whether it's a banana fruit, the peel. I mean, often it is said, offer the fruit of your action to the Lord. But guess what? Even if you offer the peels, as long as it's done with love, the Lord accepts. So this is an episode that happens. It's also important because according to the great book of the Mahabharata is divided into 18 separate books. And this happens in the fifth book called Udyoga Parva.
Mm-hmm.
Udyoga Parva is when Krishna seeks peace. And in Udyoga Parva, there's a very important treatise, which is called Vidura Niti. Vidura Niti is our guidelines and rules on how a kingdom should be ruled properly. So that entire Vidura Niti is apparently the result of a discussion that happens here at Vidura's place between Krishna and Vidura. And that is an important reason why we should mention this, because Vidura Niti, even to this day, has so many gems of wisdom that we can cherish, treasure and learn from.
There are two things, you know, which Swami used to tell in his discourses. One thing is the fear which the Pandavas had when Krishna was going for this peace mission.
Mm.
Right, Dharmaja says that, you know, it's okay, even if you lose the kingdom, it's all right, but we don't want any harm to come to you. So they don't want Krishna to go. Then Arjuna, of course, says that I will come along with you. Then, you know, but finally Krishna goes. The other person who is so concerned is Vidura, because in this entire discussion which happens in his dwelling, Vidura is asking this question, Krishna, why did you have to come? You know that they are evil, you know, because we know the story in the Mahabharata. They tried to burn down that house of wax to kill the Pandavas. They've tried all kinds of stratagems, even when they were in the, you know,
exile.
And that's the beauty. I was listening to one talk by one of the very, very famous authors. I forgot his name. Patnaik.
Yes.
Yeah, he says a very beautiful point. He says, you know, if you look at the Ramayana, Ravana was a bad man. Like, he does something which is totally bad. Goes and takes away the wife of another person. So he's clearly black. He's clearly bad. And Rama stands for somebody who's...
clearly white.
Clearly white. You know, he always sticks to the Dharma. So there it was a case of somebody who was absolutely straight fighting against a person who was absolutely crooked. Or absolutely wrong in that sense. But if you look at the Mahabharata, Duryodhana is someone who does all the wrong things within the framework of law.
He's legal.
He's legal in whatever he's doing. You know, that's why every debate he says that, but I did not force you to play the game of dice. You came by your own and you played and you lost. So everything, that is the, you know, the masterwork of Shakuni. Everything is done within the legal framework which is laid down by people like Vidura and Bhishma and all of these people.
That is more like the problem we face in the world
today.
That's
exactly, it's more like the problem we face. Because we are only worried about legality, and morality does not really bother us. You know, as long as we are legal, we are fine with it. And that's why a character like Krishna is required. You know, the character, the same Rama has come as Krishna, but Krishna says that to fight a black guy, you need a, you know, somebody who is absolutely straight, but to fight somebody who is grey, somebody who is wrong but, you know, appears to be right, you need somebody who is right but sometimes appears to be wrong.
You know, when you said this recently, there's this debate going on, you know, I just felt that I don't want to blame anybody, mm-hmm. because who am I to judge? But this is definitely a case of legality versus ethicality and morality. From what I gather in the latest lawsuit between the European Union and Apple.
Right.
You know, in brief, Ireland is a country which was in a difficult situation, and they wanted companies to invest in the country, and they gave a lot of tax ops and lot of benefits. Mm-hmm. And as early as in the 1980s, Apple went and set up their whatever manufacturing and facilities there. That is what they used as the place to get a foothold in Europe, obviously because it made sense for them, because here the tax was very, 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 very meager. If I get it right, it was anywhere between 1% to as low as 0.002%. Mm-hmm. So that kind. And that is how, using Ireland as a foothold, Apple has made billions and billions of dollars selling their products in the entire Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And now European Union has a law which states that no member country of the European Union should incentivize or give incentives to one company over the other. And now the European Union is holding Ireland responsible for it. Because, you know what, the situation changed, and going by history, Ireland has continued the same with Apple, because Apple started off with 60 employees and today it is employing over 6,000 employees,
mm-hmm.
and generated a lot of
employment
and wealth and everything for Ireland. And Ireland is happy, and they are continuing to tax Apple by the historic rate. And later on, as per whatever is the tax laws have changed accordingly for other companies. Now, European Union now says that you have to go back, and for all these years, it has slapped a fine of about $14 billion onto Apple. So, European Union says that this is not legal. You know, what you have done is you have given this to one company. But then, as per European Union laws, the European Union has promised not to infringe on the sovereignty of any country. And now Ireland is saying that, European Union, you are coming onto my sovereignty, because I decide my tax laws within my country. How can you do this? And Apple says that we have been legal. See, nobody is a saint over here. European Union is not a saint in trying to extract taxes for the past 14 years. You know, suddenly you come up until now, for the last 14 years, we change the rules. How can you do that? But Apple is also no saint either, because obviously they have selected Ireland as their base simply because of the benefit they get. And, you know, the sales in Germany, everything goes almost tax-free, because what is 0.002%? And all the money from Ireland is then sent back to headquarters at Europe. In America, I mean. So, now if you look at this, there's no black and white in this. It can go, and I'm sure that this case, you know, when this happened, everyone thought that Apple's share price will tank down because it's a big blow. But you know what? It was hardly a blip.
Mm-hmm.
Because, why? Because this is going to go to the courts, and once it goes to the courts, they say that just preparing for this case is going to take 2.5 years. Where? That is the kind of complication that is involved when there are greys. And as you rightly said, you need a person like Krishna. You need an avatar like Krishna and not an avatar like Rama, where the grey is involved.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the discussion which goes on here, because Vidura is saying that, you know, these are not straight people, and you know that peace is definitely not on their table. So why do you come and why do you do this? And, you know, that's the beauty of Krishna here. Because when you talk about Krishna in this situation and all others are only guessing that what will come in the future. All others are only preempting what is going to come, you know, as a result of the an extrapolation of whatever has happened in the past and whatever is the scenario in the present. They're extrapolating and saying that this is how the Kauravas will respond and this is how the things are going to turn out. So what is the point in coming like this? If there was anybody who knew exactly what is going to happen, it was only Krishna. if anybody in that whole gathering knew that there is going to be a war and there is going to be a huge amount of bloodshed, it was only Krishna. But Krishna was saying that even when you know that the future is going to be this, the dharma of the present does not depend on that. The dharma of the moment is the dharma of the moment. If I have to do something now, it has to be done now. It does not depend on what is the past, what is the future. You know, you can strategize based on what is the past and future. You can reason out and probably bring in a little bit of common sense in the way you do it. But what has to be done now has to be done now. And that's what Krishna explains to Vidura. He says, I know it. I absolutely know it that there is going to be a war eventually. But when we talk of dharma, when we talk of Pandavas being dharmic, they have to do all that is, all that calls for a dharmic side.
And so that is how Krishna enters the court. And dear listeners, we have a clip from again a drama entitled Krishna Rayabharam that depicts the scene of what happens in the court when Krishna goes with the peace proposal. But before we play that clip, Prem, I saw something very interesting in the same Udyoga Parva of the Mahabharata.
Okay.
It is said that there are four kinds of messengers. Okay. The first type, messengers or envoys who are sent. The first kind is, they are called as Samadhistartha.
Mm-hmm.
Samadhistartha are envoys who convey a message but do not have any discretion to negotiate.
Okay.
They are more like a mouthpiece. They just go and convey what has been said. That's it. And if there's a counter offer from the other side, they just have no idea. Possibly they can just take the counter offer and go and convey it back. That's Samadhistartha. Then the next kind of envoys are called Paramitartha. Parimitartha.
Mm-hmm.
Parimitartha are envoys who are, you know, given a circumscribed purpose.
Okay.
But the wording of that, they have got flexibility to change.
Okay.
So they have the flexibility to change the wording in order to suit the situation.
Mm.
So they have to go to the place, study the situation and change the wording accordingly. If a little flattery will get it through, use flattery. If a little strong word will get it through, use strong word. So they have got flexibility in changing the wording.
Okay.
It's not that they'll read out what is there. The third kind are called Nisritartha. Nisritartha.
Mm-hmm.
Nisritartha are envoys who are not given the wordings also. They are given an overall goal and told, this is the goal that you have to achieve. Go, now use your discretion, use your language, use whatever, and achieve this goal. And finally comes Duta. Duta Pranidhi. Duta Pranidhi or Duta is the ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
A full ambassador, with him, you know what? The goal is shared. This is the goal, but based on, because we have complete trust in your abilities and knowledge, based on the situation, you take a decision. Whatever you decide is what we decide. So though the goal is also given, for example, Krishna has gone here with the goal of peace. If Krishna understands that that is not going to happen, he can take a stance and that will be the stance that the entire Pandavas also will be taking. In fact, in the scene, I just thought this will be interesting to mention these four kinds because Krishna is a Duta here. He's a Duta Pranidhi. He's an ambassador. He's not a messenger. So I thought I should mention this because in the drama, I remember there was a dialogue where Krishna says, listen, you know, he changes off his stance. You can see that. It will come through in the drama. And he changes his stance and he says, this is it. And then he also says, see, if this is, listen, whatever I say will be agreeable to the Pandavas also. So you don't worry about this. He changes it entirely. So that is the kind of trust that the Pandavas have in Krishna, and he comes and this is what happens in the court.
This is actually a very, very beautiful description, and you know, it only shows how well documented each roles were. And you know, when Krishna comes and he says that this is right and this is wrong and this is how it has to be done. In fact, even in the Swami, when he describes that scene, Swami says that, you know, when Krishna goes into the court, he refuses to take a seat. Probably when he would have gone to the court in any other capacity, he would have been the guest. He is a person who is from a princely clan. He is coming to another kingdom. He is supposed to be given a certain kind of hospitality. But Krishna refuses to sit down. He says, I have come as a messenger. So I can sit only after all of you take your seat. You know, Swami mentions that in a discourse. So how he you know, probably he was just rubbing the salt into the thing, saying that we are doing everything by the book. We are doing everything right. So whatever happens as a consequence of, you know, the discussion today is purely your prerogative. It's not anything that we have done. So as you're saying, we'll listen to that drama. It's again the drama which was staged in the year 2007.
And yeah, you can see how much Krishna is trying to bat for peace. He tries a lot. In fact, you know, thinking of these four kinds of messengers, I was thinking in today's context, if we see, it might be like a minister or a member of a legislative assembly versus the prime minister himself going. You know, when a prime minister goes and talks to the leader of another country, it's like a duta almost, you know. Though the word ambassador can't be used here, but it's like, based on the discussion there, the prime minister can take decisions which the whole country will be agreeable to. But if, say, it's a minister, then of course they have some flexibility, but they can't deviate from the given goal. So when this comparison comes to mind, it just makes me realize what is the position that the Pandavas have given to Krishna. It's right. Like, though he is not the official leader, he is the one who is going to lead them.
And in fact, we'll see that. You know, there's another discussion I just came across in another discourse. Swami speaks about a discussion which happens after this court scene. So, that let that come after the court scene. We'll listen to the court scene from that drama.
O great king of Hastinapur, accept the salutations of this emissary of peace.
O Madhusudana, please honor me and glorify this assembly by accepting a seat.
Pranam Pitamaha.
O messenger of peace, Sri Krishna, what proposal have my beloved Pandava sent forth?
O great monarch of Bharat and the great men assembled here, I have come here on my own accord as a messenger of peace and a guardian of Dharma. And I assure you, that which is acceptable to me will be agreeable to the Pandavas as well. Peace, O Maharaj, is not a debatable issue. Just the assurance of victory in the case of war should not blind us to the miseries and tears that are an inevitable part of it. The talents of death and destruction shall shred both the sides. With this broader perspective comes a responsibility of righteousness, justice and peace to this illustrious assembly. O great king, you belong to the lineage of truth and tradition. Time beckons you now to take a decision. Lead the Kuru race upon the path of peace, for therein alone is the good of this great land. History will not hold cunning Shakuni responsible for the game of dice, nor will it debate upon the despicable act of Suyodhana insulting Draupadi, for they happened in your court, Maharaj. Now again it is your call, O king. Make no mistake this time.
Vasudeva, perhaps no one desires the war.
If no one desires a war, respected grandsire, then why words like perhaps? Words like perhaps are too feeble to voice for Shanti. O Maharaj, if the Kauravas and Pandavas come together under one banner, there will be limitless glory. And man will never know where paradise ends and earth begins. You will be the noblest of monarchs whose magnificence will be sung in eons to come. But heavens forbid, if you choose war, who knows upon how many corpses you will have to weep. Make peace, O great king, by returning Indraprastha to the Pandavas.
Why Indraprastha alone, Keshava? Take Hastinapura as well. Long have they roamed the forest. We will press their tired feet. Suyodhana, abdicate the throne. Go, kneel in their presence and kiss the hem of Dharmaja's robe. And let history term you as one of unparalleled magnanimity.
Stop it, Mamashri. Krishna, this peace proposal is not acceptable to me.
My son, bathe not your thinking with fleeting emotions. Abhor greed and leave your petty pride. Before you dispose the proposal as an unworthy end, weigh it in terms of greater good.
Beware of the righteous indignation of Dharmaja, the fearsome rage of Bhima, and the unparalleled skill of Arjuna. Meeting them in war is utterly foolish.
Let not the voice of your conscience go unheard, my son. Let not death and desolation ravage your clan. Let your people wield plows and not swords. Let the sun smile on the green fields and the kingdom rise in peace and prosperity.
Sip these words of wisdom, Suyodhana, and be at peace.
Is this my kingdom and my own royal hall? All around me, I see my own people conspiring against me.
Speak not such words, my son. They are your elders and well-wishers.
My heart swells with pride to see a plethora of well-wishers. Well-wishers who adore my enemies.
Oh, wise men, let me clarify. Dharmaja participated in the game of dice on his own volition. As per the will of destiny, he lost the game and went into exile. Had we lost the game, we too would have vanished into the depths of anonymity and not come clamoring like this.
Were there any chances of you losing the game? Everyone seated here knows how fair the game of dice was.
Krishna, what madness is it to break the kingdom into pieces to honor foolish rites? Not just the 5 Pandavas, the 100 of us. Bhishma, Vidura, and even sage Vyasa have their legitimate share over this kingdom. Would it then be advisable to divide the kingdom into individual legitimate shares, ignoring the interests of my subjects? Their well-being is my utmost concern.
Where are the kings like you, Suyodhana, whose ears are open to the woes of their subjects, but deaf to the voice of their own conscience? Anyway, if you cannot give back the Pandavas their kingdom, then at least part with 5 villages. Avistal, Varkastal, Makandi, Varnavat, and any other village of your choice.
Krishna, you are asking me to give those villages which I have gifted to my relatives and friends. Is it possible? Is this the way you make a proposal? And now you will change me as an emperor who could not part with even 5 villages. 5 villages? Tell them, even a speck of land that is needed to place the tip of a needle shall not be given to them.
Mistake not their silence for submission and their humility for meekness, O Suyodhana. The wise seldom speak, but when they speak, time itself would stop to hear their words. The powerful are always humble, but once they are enraged, the heavens themselves would shudder.
Krishna, have you come on a peace mission? Or are you trying to terrorize us? The Pandavas will be scattered like a herd of frightened deer when I shall romp like a bloodthirsty tiger amongst them.
Boast not of your valor, O Karna. The world has not yet forgotten how you heaved into unconsciousness at the face of Arjuna's arrows in the war against Virata. Tell your dear friend that gruesome would be the sight to watch poor Dushasana's blood dripping from Panchali's tresses. What a pity it would be to see Emperor Suyodhana mourning helplessly on the battlefield with his thighs shattered by Bhima's mace.
Hear, O Ahankari Duryodhana, if you pursue this path of greed,
Even Gandhari will not have enough tears to wet your corpse.
How dare you speak of my mother's tears? Saved art thou that you are a messenger of peace. Otherwise...
Otherwise? What would you do?
I would rip your tongue and make you my prisoner.
Can you? Try and bind me, if you can.
Gods, arrest him! Gods, he's up there! He's over there too!
That music climax is when Krishna is granting the Vishvavirata Swarupa Darshan. It is said that for those few moments, even the blind king Dhritarashtra is gifted with the eyes so that he can see the reality for at least a brief moment. And of course, Bhishma, Drona, all of them are blessed with this Darshan. In that sense also, you see, Krishna has been impartial while he granted this Darshan to the Pandavas and Arjuna on the battlefield. The Kauravas too had that darshan here, so we can't call him partial. You know, if we look at this entire way Krishna reasons out, of course, what we played in the scene was a very abridged version, because when you're putting a drama, it has its own constraints. But if we read through the entire thing, we will see that the way Krishna places the proposal forms into four distinct segments. And again, in this Udyoga Parva, this is described as the way of making a proposal, you know. And the four stages are Sama, Dana, Bheda and Danda. Sama means reconciliation, peaceful talk, amicable talk, trying to come to a compromise. You first try with Sama. If Sama doesn't work, then you go to Dana, where you become generous. You shower generosity on your opponents. And if generosity also doesn't work to bring peace, you try Bheda. Bheda is dividing your opponents and striking fear in their hearts. And when Bheda also doesn't work, that is when you take up the final option, which is Danda. Danda or punishment or an armed conflict, which is the Kurukshetra war in this case. So Krishna as an envoy followed these stages to the letter and to the spirit. Sama, Dana, Bheda and Danda.
Exactly. In fact, that is how Swami describes this entire scene. The way Krishna starts his dialogue, you know, when he goes into the court, Swami says, Dhritarashtra looks at him and says, Krishna, what have my Pandavas, you know, proposed through you?
Hmm.
And he starts off by not saying that this is a proposal. You know, the way Swami narrates that incident, he says, O King, when I was about to start, Yudhishthira comes running to me and he falls at my feet and he says, pray on my behalf to Dhritarashtra. Say that I lost my father when I was very young. All through my life, I've grown up thinking of the king as my father, you know, Dhritarashtra as my father. Tell him that I even now consider myself more as a son of his than another king who is seeking his kingdom. Tell them that if in any way, if I've made a mistake, consciously or unconsciously, tell him that as a son, I'm praying to my father for forgiveness. And in spite of it, if he says that I've done a mistake which does not call for forgiveness, then tell him that anything that he decides as a punishment for me and my brothers is acceptable for me. And this is what he says. You know, when you say this, even the king who would like to say that, yes, this is the punishment, you know, never come and ask for a kingdom again, cannot say it. Because he is saying it with such humility. You know, humility. And even as you are saying it, anybody who knows Yudhishthira will know that Yudhishthira is capable of saying it. In fact, Yudhishthira does say this. This is what is Yudhishthira's real words. It's not that Krishna is making it up. But Krishna starts the discourse with this, saying that this is what the Pandavas have told. And as you are saying that this is purely that, you know, that phase where you are telling it pleasantly, saying that, you know, we really want reconciliation.
It is like there are 100 things to be said. So you start off with the most pleasant and right. reconciliatory statements. And when, he is saying, but what Dhritarashtra says, but Krishna, you know, what can I do? Like we heard in the dialogue sequence there, he says, it's my son, you know, I'm helpless, it's my own children, what can I do? They're all part of me, they have come from me. You know, how can I be cruel on them? And in that discourse that you're referring to, I think that is the discourse from the 1976 Summer Roses course. In the Blue Mountains, fourth or fifth discourse. Swami says that Krishna tells there that, listen, O King, even urine and fecal matter come out from you. Doesn't mean you'll fondly cherish them and you will throw them out, right? You will discard them. In the same way, you will have to discard. If what is coming out is disgusting and wrong, you have to discard it. So, you know, first he starts off with a lot of love and this, but then he gets on to a logical discussion, talking like friends. Come on, let's not mince any words. Let us tell. This is the facts. Face it. But even that doesn't seem to calm down, change Dhritarashtra's mind. And that is when Krishna, you know, lets go of Sama and takes on the next, which is Dana. Generosity. Just imagine, Krishna says, whatever is agreeable to me is agreeable to the Pandavas also. And so, King, you know what? Let's forget all this. Forget giving half the kingdom and all that. Just give 5 villages for the 5 Pandavas. They will rule there and be happy. Just 5 villages. You know, what kind of charity is this? Like the Pandavas, what they will feel? Oh, Krishna, we sent you as an ambassador and you have given away everything. And you have said that your word is as good as our word. But, you know, this in itself shows the extent to which Krishna is wanting peace. He's ready. Basically, you are selfish. Just be ready to step out of your selfishness even a little bit. Even if you can't part with half the kingdom, can you part with 5 villages? It's enough. That's a very, very, very generous offer. And it's when that is also refused, that is when I think Krishna takes up the third level of Bheda, which is dividing the Kauravas and striking fear in them.
Exactly. And, you know, that is when Krishna is saying that just because we are talking peace, just because we are talking charity, it does not mean we are scared. You know, the point which we made the last week, it is attitudes such as kshama or forbearance or forgiveness or fortitude. All of this come out of a position of power. It doesn't come out of a position of weakness. If it comes out of a position of weakness, it is you're glorifying. Yeah, you're glorifying cowardice. But when it comes from a situation of power, it is you're from a higher state. You are coming down and you're offering a hand of friendship, and that's what Krishna says here. Because, and as you said, that is when the Bheda part comes. He says, it is not that we are weak. Have you forgotten the various times in the past? He refers to that war of Virat, where Arjuna single-handedly actually defeats all of these great heroes they're talking about, be it Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, and Karna, and all of the other main brothers of, you know, Duryodhana. He says all of these people were single-handedly defeated by Arjuna alone. Forget the rest of the army. And you are telling that you can defeat us in the battle. You know, which dream world are you living in? And he says, from that, we have that power, but we are asking for, you know,
reconciliation. He reminds of Bhima's vow. He says, right. You know, Dushyasana's chest will get ripped apart. Blood will be there all around. Your mother Gandhari will not have enough tears to shed for you. You know, he paints a gory picture. I just feel that listening to all this, you know, if I was in the Kaurava camp, I would have said, hey, you know what, my leader is nuts here. I don't want to fight for him. You know, this is the third level, because if people are not ready to reconcile, and even when you're doing charity, if they're not ready to take it, it means they're hell-bent on war. So before the war, being an astute statesman, he lowers the morale. You know, it's like the people who are fighting on the Kaurava side are not convinced that they have to be fighting on the Kaurava side. So though in numbers they are there, in their spirit, they've already sagged. They've already gone on saying that, you know what, we are not fighting for a proper cause. You know, that spirit of knowing that we are fighting for a just cause is such a powerful one. That is what leads to a handful of people creating a revolution against all odds because of that conviction. And the same lack of conviction leads to the decay and death of magnificent empires like the Roman Empire or the British Empire. So this conviction is such a strong thing, and Krishna strikes at that. That is where Bheda comes in. That is creating a division. And, you know, even this Vishwarupa Darshan, though it is a blessing for the saintly people there, that is Vidura, Bhishma, Drona, for all of them it's a great blessing of the Lord. For the others, it is a thing that can strike you fear. You know, you are taking up arms against the Lord. You know, if you are a lover of Swami, when Swami reveals His omnipresence and omniscience to you, you are thrilled. But if you are on the wrong side and the Lord reveals His omnipresence and omniscience to you, you shudder, right? We shudder. We shudder in our pants. That's what happens. So, it strikes great fear amongst them. And Krishna is hoping that at least this, with this now at least you will come into your senses and stop the war. Because it's not it started the war. But it's only when even Bheda fails, that is when danda or punishment has to be taken up, which is the war, and that's what happens.
And in the talking of this Bheda, it actually takes us back to that discussion we started today's satsang with. Because, you know, here in the camp of the Kauravas, we are talking about Bhishma, who is a very, very righteous man. You're talking about Kripacharya and Dronacharya, who are very, very exalted people in the kingdom. They're Brahmins, they're teachers, they're gurus. You're talking of this group, which is, you know, Duryodhana, Karna and all of his brothers, who are basically macho, who are, you know, thumping their chests and saying that we can do it.
Bronze over brains.
Right. And you're also talking about Dhritarashtra, who is purely acting based on his attachment. And all of what Krishna is doing is, you know, when you talk of Bheda, it is, you know, a certain way separating each one of them. Because he is standing here and he's giving the Vishwarupa Darshan, which is for these noble people who are stuck up in the wrong side. Saying that, yes, your dharma is taking you to one side, but, you know, what we spoke about Atma Dharma. Here I am the divine one, I am telling you that this is the right side. Will you still stick to your, you know, Paradharma? He's striking the fear in their hearts in this manner. He's talking about, you know, Gandhari crying and not being able to wet the corpses of their sons with their tears. Talking about Dushasana's, you know, blood dripping from the hair of Draupadi. That is striking the attachment in the heart of Dhritarashtra.
Correct.
And he's talking about the battle which they lost. And hitting at the ego of the warriors on the other side.
Pa.
And clearly he's doing all of this in this particular thing of Bheda which he's doing. And, you know, it's so important when you talk about the Narayani Sena, they're saying that they could not follow Krishna or, you know, they could not be in the side of Krishna, but they had to follow Krishna's words. That's precisely the option which he's, you know, which he's putting before Bhishma and Dronacharya and Kripacharya, which sadly they could not accept, which sadly they could not, you know, seize that opportunity.
At this point, dear listeners, we hope that just like we have a firm conviction that Krishna tried his best for peace, in spite of knowing that the war is inevitable. I am not saying at a human level, at a divine level, he knew that the war is inevitable, yet he showed exemplary dharma, the adherence to dharma by wagering for peace. So with this, we'll take a little break here. After this break, we will conclude this topic. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back very soon.
Pashu tu hai, Baba, yash bhi tumhare.
Sab hoth se pyara,
मधुर होंठ से प्यारा सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ तुम्हारा आवाज तेरी गीत हमारे भाषा तिहारी बोल हमारे आवाज तेरी गीत हमारे भाषा तिहारी हमारे अश्व तू है बाबा यश भी तुम्हारे अश्व तू है बाबा यश भी तुम्हारे प्राण हमारे शरण तुम्हारे सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ तुम्हारा चलन कैसे मुझ में सब होंठ से प्यारा सब होंठ से प्यारा सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ मन में ही पूरा हंसता चेहरा दिन और रात भी याद है बसता मन में ही पूरा हंसता चेहरा दिन और रात भी याद है बसता इस जीव को बाबा बस तेरी छाया इस जीव को तेरी छाया डर कोई भी नहीं जन्म लो जितने सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ तुम्हारा चलन कैसे मुझ में सब होंठ से होंठ से प्यारा सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ तुम्हारा सारथी तू बाबा शंख मैं हूँ तुम्हारा
Dear listeners, brings us to the last part of this week's program. We're talking about the episode in the Mahabharata where Krishna goes as a peace emissary. And the main reason why we spoke about this is, you know, there is this question whether Krishna wanted war or wanted peace. And whether the Bhagavad Gita, if you look at it, is a manual that inspires man to war or is there anything more finer in that? And as we have been going through in the past 2 weeks, Krishna did not advocate war. In fact, he did not even advocate peace, if you ask me. Krishna only advocated dharma. And if that dharma of that moment was to talk about peace, then you talk about peace. When you use out all your other options, I mean, all other doors are closed, and finally when nothing else nothing else can aid the establishment of dharma other than war, that's when war becomes the option. And we've seen that, you know, the four ways which you have to practice before you finally come down to fight, which is
I think that is the difference, you know. Nowadays, right, when people speak of dharma yuddha, and they're taking danda as the first option, they're taking war as the first option. The fellows who fight for war, who say that we should attack, and in any sense.
In fact, you know, if you want to take a more contemporary example, somebody from our freedom struggle, whom Swami speaks of very, very highly.
Hmm.
If you look at Subhash Chandra Bose.
Hmm.
Subhash Chandra Bose was a Gandhian before he became the commander of the Indian National Army.
Hmm. A Gandhian meaning wanting an ahimsa.
I mean, he was a part of the Congress. He was under the leadership of Mahatma Gandhi.
Hmm.
And he... It was after a long period he confronted Mahatma Gandhi and said, this is not going to work out. Because we are talking about peace and, you know, the response from the other side is not the same. We will only be, you know, harming the people from our side like this. And even then he did not take the path of, you know, straight violence or in the sense of terrorism. He said, let's form a proper army. Let's follow the rules of, you know, armed combats and, you know, and we will do it really in the way under the rules and laws of that day. And, you know, that's what Krishna is really showing out here.
Because I see it even in, like, in our own organization, when there is, possibly I'll come to that, right away, because we have not much time. In our own organization, when we see these kind of mediums and intermediaries propping up, which we feel, which is definitely not what Swami said at all. It is totally adharmic. People are taking Swami's words, twisting his words, putting it through their own mouths and quoting to be ambassadors or messengers through whom Swami is speaking, and all this nonsense going on. There is a section of devotees who are crying for the blood, you know. They say war, 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 war. I feel we should look at these episodes and realize that war or danda is the final option. You know, there is sama to be explored, dana to be explored, veda to be explored. In fact, in that same discourse, you know, I feel all the devotees who are pained by so many frauds coming up, be it Mudinalli or anywhere, who feel that, you know, out and out war is the option. I feel all of us must read that discourse in that book, Summer Roses from the Blue Mountains, this very discourse which is having the title as Krishna was not a war monger but a lover of peace, greatest epitome of peace. In that, Swami describes one such false Krishna who came up, that is Paundrika. Paundrika was a king who began to imitate Krishna, play the flute, you know, wear the crown of peacock feather, right, and act as if he is Krishna, you know. And Swami writes there that Krishna had no problem with it. He said, okay, live and let live, fine, you know, let him imitate. And he went on higher and higher in the atrocities. And Swami says in the discourse that messages were sent to him to be calm, and everything was tried, and Krishna gave him such a long rope. And only when he began to claim ownership over Rukmini and Satyabhama, Krishna's wives, you know, look at the extent to which this man went. It's like what Ravana did, you know. He went to claim Rukmini and Satyabhama. That is when, in one shot, Krishna releases the Sudarshana Chakra and this person is dispatched. But see, it shows that the Lord we have is a very, very, very loving Lord who gives a very long rope. And that is the way the Lord is, whether it is Satya Sai or Shirdi Sai or Shiva or Krishna. They always choose peace. They are never warmongers. They always are lovers of peace. It is only as a last resort that war is brought in. And when that comes in, it's a complete clean slate that is created, and it is only dharma that protects each individual. Just like the Narayani Sena was on the Kaurava side, but they were protected, and in the end they came unscathed from the war. Same way I feel, if some person has genuinely fallen for a fraud, and he's genuinely convinced that, you know, this fraud is actually Swami in this, I feel that kind of genuineness, that kind of adherence to their dharma and being true and innocent, that innocence itself will protect them, just like Krishna's grace protected the Narayani Sena.
Right. In fact, in the same discourse, Swami even quotes of examples of how Krishna, on many other occasions, like this occasion with the Paundrika, he gives them a long rope only because, as Swami would say, you know, if you really want to bring dharma to the bare minimum, it is maximum good for the maximum number of people. In fact, that is what Krishna keeps saying throughout this entire episode of the world. I think the clip which we played last week, where he says, there's another discourse where Swami says that Draupadi at one point, when Krishna is talking all of this peace, she says, but what about all the vows that I've taken? Because in those days, you take a vow when you're not able to accomplish it, you end your life. Right? And here is Draupadi who said that I will not braid my hair till I wet it with blood of Dushasana. And then Bhima says that I will rip the thighs of Duryodhana. So what will happen if you come to peace? You know, if those Duryodhana had accepted, okay, 5 villages, already you have the 5 villages, and let's settle with that. What would have happened to these vows? At one point, Draupadi says, you know, what about my vows? And Krishna turns to her and tells her very straight. He says, if your vows can wait and give life to those million people who will die in the war, why not? Why not peace? And you know, that is the bare minimum of dharma, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And that is why Krishna on many occasions in the past would always try to avoid a war, because he says that a war will invariably result in the widowing of people, in children becoming orphaned. And
collateral damage.
Right, collateral damage. If we can avoid that, let's avoid it. And same is the case when in the episode of Jarasandha. Now, Jarasandha is a very, very powerful king. He's supposed to be the king of Magadha, which is supposed to be a kingdom as powerful as the Kaurava kingdom on the other side of the continent. And his son-in-law was Kamsa, you know, the uncle with whom Krishna started off his entire avataric mission with. So Jarasandha was really wanting to take revenge, and it is said that 17 times he attacks Mathura, the kingdom of Mathura, and every time, apparently, Krishna runs away.
With Balrama.
Because he feels that if he is after my life, and if he comes and he is not able to find me, at least he will leave without harming the citizens.
That also speaks of the level of dharma in the so-called villains of those days also.
Right, exactly.
Just imagine that.
Right. No, that's precisely when Krishna was responding to each situation based on the person he is dealing with. And he knew that this will be Jarasandha's response. So he runs away, and 17 times he runs away. And that's why he gets that name. One of the appellations for Lord Krishna is that
Ranchod,
the one who has left, who has ran away from the battlefield. Right? And it is said that the 17th time he actually relocates to Dwaraka. He leaves Mathura and goes all the way to Dwaraka and sets up a kingdom there.
Actually, if you see, it's about 300 to 400 miles apart, I think, Mathura and Dwaraka, in the map if you see today.
Right. So that Swami quotes all of these examples, and he says that, you know, it again comes back to that. If we have a contorted way at looking at the avatar's life, we will pick and choose only those things which justify our wrong deeds and wrong intentions. But if we approach it with that feeling that I want to know what is right and wrong, and believe that if Krishna has done something, there's something right about it. If at face value it does not appear so, let me read more. As you said, you know, if you go back to this Mahabharata and if you read these things in detail, I think there is no way you can have doubt.
And I don't think one life is enough for it, Prem. Even to simply read and understand at face value also, it's so much is there.
Absolutely. I think finally it comes down to that belief that here is Krishna, as Swami would say, here is a perfect individual. Even in Swami's life, Swami said, my life is my message. Keep that as your touchstone, and then look at all of these different roles that Krishna played, Rama played, or any avatar plays, then we will be able to draw those lessons. That's why the first and foremost in the study of any scripture, in the study of any epic, is what Swami says, is that faith. You start with faith.
So with that, dear listeners, we bring the curtains on to this theme and this topic. We hope that just like we gained a lot of insights and gained a lot of joy in discussing this, the same has been the case with you. As always, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We are grateful to Swami for this opportunity, which He continues to shower on us, to think about Him, to feel Him, and to enjoy the bliss that His name and form brings in our heart. We offer our heartfelt gratitude to Him. We will conclude this segment with a song, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love.
Bandara Lavanya Sukumaram Nandana Mandara Lavanya Sukumaram Pavana Manjira Mahaniya Madhuriya Gajaram Gaganalu Ghoshinchu Namam Suravaralu Poojinchu Padam Abhayalu Varshinchu Hastam Hridayalu Murpinchu Vadanam Swami Mariye Naki Bhagyam Telupanandukko Nandana Mandara Lavanya Sukumara Pavana Manjira Mahaniya Madhuriya Gatram
ఋషికేశుడే ధర్మదూతయై బోధించు పరమ సత్యం మమకార మూర్ఖ కుటిలం వెలిగించు సమరానలం విదురాదులు చూపించడి పరమార్థ ప్రేమ సారం
సకల భావాలో గానమై భిన్న భావాలో దీపమై భాషించి దేవా
నందన మందారా లావణ్య సుకుమారం పావన మంజీర మహనీయ మాధుర్య గాత్రం
సకలము నీటి బిందువై కాలము దుటి గీతై సకలము నీటి బిందువై
పాడని హృదయ గీతిక వెలుగని ప్రేమ దీపిక నిఖిలమై నందన మందారా లావణ్య సుకుమార పావన మందిర మహనీయ మాధుర్య గాత్రం
గగనాలు పోషించు నామం సురవరలు పూజించు పాదం
అభయాలు వర్షించు హస్తం హృదయాలు మురిపించు వదనం
కందన మందారా